Hello, welcome to the Tuesday Night Discussion Group. We'll be discussing Steve Ozenich's The Great Pain Deception, Faulty Medical Advice is Making Us Worse. This has been a good book. We're getting close to the end of it, and we're on two of the three last chapters we're going to study this week. And one of the chapters is chapter 38, Letting Go, and it's going to be a powerful study. And chapter 39, TMS Gives Hope. Hope is the mainstay. Hope is everything. And I was just telling everybody earlier that it seems like every week we put in the ingredients for TMS healing. It's like the show is a show in itself of how you heal from TMS. It's not always like that every week, but this when I was reading for tonight's show, that's what I got. Just in this letting go and this TMS gives hope. I saw the whole TMS healing chain again. So we're going to get into that. But I do want to give the reminder that before we start, I do need to let everyone know that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. If you have a medical concern, you should see a properly licensed physician, or as we say, a TMS physician. Now, with that being said, I'm going to open the ground to Bruce MC. And go away, Bruce.
Well, I think I'm going to sound a little like Dr. Zafarides because
okay.
This last chapter, this next to the last chapter, chapter 38, like Herbie says, is so full of meaning and pregnant with meaning that it's almost overwhelming. It's like a diagram. It provides a diagram in miniature of what TMS healing is about. And reading over this short one page, I tried to find one sentence that distilled what Steve was trying to say in here. And I think one of his last sentences is to telling you what to do to get rid of your TMS is holding on to things that do not serve self can be a deadly course of action. By holding steadfast to anything, to everything, we may be killing ourselves. And he gives us an example, the way cancer cells operate, a way they don't budge and they don't change. And then he talks about a woman who was so upset about her husband cheating in a book by Dr. Colbert, Deadly Emotions, that she held on to that feeling of hate all her life until it manifested in rheumatoid arthritis. Now, at the start of each one of these chapters, usually Steve has a little epigraph that gives you a kind of sense of what he's about in a distilled form again. And he quotes the Stoic philosopher Epictetus at the start of this chapter. He lived from 55 AD to 135 AD. And the quote he gives is, "There is only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about things which are beyond the power of our will." Epictetus was an ancient Greek philosopher. He left no writing, but he had someone copied down everything that he said. But Epictetus taught that philosophy is a way of life and not just a theoretical discipline. He said that suffering occurs from trying to control what is uncontrollable or from neglecting what is within our power. As part of the universal city that is the universe, it is our duty to care for our fellow men. Those who follow these precepts will achieve happiness and peace of mind. And this is the Stoic philosophy in a nutshell. Steve entitles this chapter, has a little subtitle saying, "You Stress Versus Distress." And this comes from Brock University, which was founded in 1964 in Ontario. I dug a little bit, which operates with the intention of unifying right brain and left brain thinking. the distinction that Steve is trying to make here about eustress versus distress is that eustress is the good stress that motivates you to continue working. Stress can be a motivator and provide incentive to get the job done. The good stress is what eustress can be identified as, and some people enjoy it. But bad stress, the distress, is when the good stress becomes too much to bear or cope with. Tension builds, there is no longer any fun in the challenge, there seems to be no relief, no end in sight. This is the kind of stress most of us are familiar with. And Steve illustrates this by saying that tension is the psychophysiological reaction to the interpretation of events. By not holding on to the overzealous interpretation of any event, medical imaging, or prognosis, the body doesn't respond as strongly. And that, of course, applies to TMS healing, where you don't pay attention to the symptoms so that they perpetuate themselves. You don't pay attention to what the doctor says about the spinal abnormalities, or what the readings of the MRI are, so that they so take over your mind that they become self-fulfilling prophecies. And I think that's chapter 38 in a nutshell there. We've gone into Greek philosophy and we've attended Brock University in the process. I'm just amazed at how much Steve stuffs into these chapters, how much deeper you can go if you start looking up his little quotes and his references.
Yeah, well, each sentence is a topic in the chapter 38, Letting Go.
Yeah.
Like the Epictetus, is that the way you say it? The Stoic philosopher? Just what he said there. I mean, you know, we make sayings simpler a lot of times, and we make it so simple that it takes away all the how-tos and how you do, you know, what you do to get better, if it's happiness, if it's joy, if it's mindfulness, whatever it is. A lot of times we'll say it in such a simple form that it'll take away, you know, the essence of what it is. And when I look here at what Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher, says again, I'm going to re-say what you said. There's only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about things which are beyond the power of our will. And right underneath it, I wrote, happiness is healing, okay? And that was just my little short version of getting it in my head and what it meant. But it actually means so much more than just happiness is healing. Because when I sit here and I say what the great philosopher there said, what I come up with is, you know, to tell somebody stop worrying, and you're in a Western civilization, they think it's impossible. You see? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. They think it's impossible. You know, when they first told me to stop worrying, I thought, well, what planet did you come from? What are you talking about? Stop worrying. I didn't know that was doable. I didn't know that was accomplishable. I didn't know that you could do that, you know? And then after I started going through the TMS healing, started picking up on what I needed to do, my reaction controls, my meditations, you know, my breathing and so much more, journaling and whatever else, you know, I started to understand how not to worry then, you know, but I had to train my mind not to worry, because I was already conditioned, Bruce. I was already conditioned to worry about everything. I mean, how did it hit you, you know, when you heard stop worrying?
Well, Herbie, do you remember those little diagrams that Steve had of the way people who are worried anticipate the future? I think they were earlier in the book, where there are about three different courses you can, where somebody's balanced, they can weigh the alternatives and say, well, this is the way it's going to be. But then if somebody is anxious, he has those little charts with the anxious individual. where the troubles keep building and building and building in anticipation of an event that never takes place.
And see, I'm saying we don't know in the Western civilization. I wasn't brought up to know that I could. I thought I could worry all I wanted in my mind, and it wasn't going to bother me. It was just thoughts, by the way. You know, how could that hurt me? You know, it was never drilled in my head that that, you know, really can kill you, even though you hear stress can kill and heart attacks, a silent killer and all that. You don't really hear it drilled into the Western, you know, civilization knowledge. You know, these thoughts you're having, these worrisome triviality thoughts is killing you.
Well,
you know?
Epictetus thought that all external events are determined by fate and are thus beyond our control. And he says we should accept whatever happens. But he still says individuals are responsible for their own actions, which they can examine and control through rigorous self-discipline. So he really solves that free will versus determinism. Okay, this is what you get, but you've got choices to make.
It reminds me a lot of the Serenity Prayer from AA. God grant me the oh gosh, I don't know if I remember it. The serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I guess, you know, Epictetus is saying, you know, there's so much in life that you can't change, and you need the serenity to accept those things. But then there are certain things that are under your control, and so that's where you need the courage to change those. And so Epictetus would be all about cultivating those moral qualities so that you can stand up and do those things that you need to do. And then obviously his role is to give you the wisdom to know the difference.
Well, you know, I think about the situations a lot of times, like say a woman maybe, and she has to, and she's trying to heal from TMS. She goes home, her husband, he thinks it's okay if we argue and all that, and she'll still heal. Of course, we can argue, we can get upset, we can have negative thoughts at times. The thing is getting an overall general control of our out-of-control tits of thinking, right? But anyway, the lady goes home, she's trying to get better. She's in the beginning stages, okay? And she's trying to get better, and her husband doesn't understand the TMS philosophy, and he still wants to yell, scream, fuss, fight, kick doors in. You know, she used to do the same stuff with him, but now she's trying to calm her, you know, autonomic nervous system. She's trying to calm her she's trying to get her meditation down. She's trying to calm these sensitized nerves that's brought on pain or anxiety, right? But now that she's starting to learn the truth, she's starting to learn that, you know, she needs to get her meditations down to calm her nerves down, to get the sensitization down so she can get better. And, you know, other things like repression, she can't, you know, hold stuff in anymore. So she wants to talk things out, talk it out in an orderly fashion, you know, not too violent. But yet when she gets to talking about it, he wants to yell and scream. You know, and he's not picking up on it. So this is a part where reaction control, somebody that has to control their reactions in order to get better, would have a hard time, would you not say? You know, I'm not talking about somebody going to get a divorce. I'm just talking about another mate that doesn't understand that this other person is trying to get better through healing, through the TMS way, which does take a lot of calming of the nerves.
It's hard to talk rationally with somebody when they're tantruming.
But there is a key here, and it's laughter. I think if she could just make him laugh every time he gets mad, you know, that's the second chapter here about laughter and Bob Hope. I think if she can just get him to laughing, you know, put something funny in his drink or something. What do you think, Tom?
Now, why do you turn to Tom when we talk about putting funny things in drinks? That's what I want to know.
Because Tom knows about good drinks, you know? I mean, I think a good drink would calm me down. What do you think, Tom?
Well, yeah, I did used to be a bartender, so maybe that's why. I think my favorite drink is called the Pecan Punch, and I highly recommend them. It's a Basque drink. It's hard to get, but I'll give you the recipe later.
Okay.
Yeah, so Yeah, it's a kind of archaic drink, but it's two of those, and you won't have any TMS to worry about.
That's true.
For at least one night, for at least that evening, you know.
With Amer Pecan, is that it? In Greenwich?
Yeah. Hard to find. Bevmo has it, but they kind of hide it away, and it's a Basque drink, and you can't get it from France anymore for some reason. So there's an American company, the one who makes the Torani things for coffee, you know, the syrups. They started making it again. So, but this is kind of quite a segue. I do remember the topic, and it's something to do with someone has a wife and a husband, and the guy gets angry at his wife, and the woman's trying to get TMS. Was that the topic, I think?
Yeah, you know, woman or man or woman, you know, one's understanding they got to calm the autonomic nervous system down. The other ones just don't get it right now, and it's making it hard on the person that's trying to get better. Yeah. I have spoke to a lot of people that goes through that, and what would you say to
Yeah, I've been finding more and more that as Steve-O has said, relationships are generally the problem, you know, and most relationships are boy, girl, man, woman, whatever, old coot, you know, and they just naturally, I think, when the relationship goes bad, start going away, and one side will not accept that it's TMS because that's the way they are. It's too, they're going the other way, and there's the most of the cause for the TMS is the bad relationship, and that they don't want to they are no longer able to empathize with each other, and you know, they should have gotten out of the relationship years ago, but our society doesn't make it easy, so everything works against and people suffer and stay in these relationships forever, and we've probably all been in them or are in them or have had them or will be. So
In this case, Tom, say he just the relationship was already arguing and all that, and they came to terms to agree to disagree, you know, and they do get along, you know. It's one of those relationships where, you know, we all get married and we all argue, but they still get along. The thing is, one just understands it and the other one doesn't, and you have to. I think you need to have somebody. You know, I know you can do the TMS journey by yourself. I understand that. But I also think it's an added bonus if you got somebody that's there with you that can help you along, as a friend, as somebody that maybe lends an ear, you know.
Well, that'd be great. That's what these meetings are for, and that's what the message boards are for. You know, my girlfriend, she had lifelong asthma, and after I read that, Dr. Sarno said asthma is TMS, and I gave her the book and. She got that part, and she no longer has asthma.
Yeah.
But she's a voracious reader, but she won't read TMS books. I gave her some books, and she read some and put them aside. And, you know, I don't know why. She's into murder mysteries more, and why she's not more accepting of TMS. Every time she has something, I tell her, and she says, Tom, you're going to tell me it's TMS. And she says, you're right, it's TMS. And I say, just wait. It'll go away, and it does, and... But we don't, it doesn't resonate with her like it does with me, you know, so.
Yeah,
that's my answer.
Okay. So Herbie, tell me how, I hear this story with the couple, the married couple. Tell me how that connects with, remind me how you brought that up and how you connected that to the Letting Go chapter. Like, let's.
Well, you have to let things go. I mean, if you're going to, you know, as much as I do, Forrest, if you're going to watch your reactions, you know, if you are going to lead a sort of a worry-free life, then one of the things you're going to have to do is watch your reactions for sure, you know? Yeah, and you're coming in and you're trying to watch your reactions. You're trying to, you know, do it all right. But, you know, somebody you're close to doesn't understand all that. They're setting you off all the time. They already got like 5,000 triggers probably that sets you off. You know, because you've been together 5-10 years. And the thing is, you know, what would be a strategy in order for this person to make it, you know, without having to, you know, give up TMS or get a divorce or, you know, take some drastic move. What would be, you know, away from this lady could get out of the situation. To me, it was like I heard this story about a woman, and her son kept coming over, and he kept just getting on her nerves, She kept getting stressed out. Every time he'd pop a wheelie on his motorcycle, she'd get nervous. Every time he'd get in an argument with the next door neighbor, she'd get nervous. Well, her therapist told her to stop reacting to him. No matter what he done, don't react to it. Just let it go. Just let it go. And that's the name of the, you know, chapter here. And she actually practiced that for a month. And she, well, one day he didn't show up. And then she called and she said, well, why didn't you show up over here, son? He said, well, you ain't no fun no more, Mom. He said, I'm down here at Gary's house, which is one of his friends. I'm down here and I'm giving her a hard time today. And what happened was, by her not reacting, she wasn't feeding into, you know, what he called playful joy. You know, she wasn't feeding into that anymore. So he left. So he went on and he started, you know, aggravating somebody else's mom. To make a long story short, she figured out how to get out of a situation that she didn't know how to get out of, just by not mm-hmm. reacting to what he was doing with his actions. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, that's just one way, you know, and it does take a lot of, you know, a lot of willpower, but that's one way, you know, that I learned.
Yeah, it takes two to tango.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that was it, you know, on that part.
One of Steve's sentences that caused me to have a few questions was, he says, the pain of TMS begins to wane when you no longer attach any meaning to the structural changes. Okay, you're no longer obsessing about the pain in your back and your knee. You're no longer anticipating a real grim future because of these things. But then he adds on, or when you let go of those things that sting your ego. What are those sort of things that sting your ego that you have to let go of?
Is that chapter 38?
Yeah, it's the end of the first paragraph. I mean, I think that Steve, throughout the book, he talks a lot about how about ego. And ego is really the bad guy in many places in the book, where, you know, we have our ego. And because we have these commitments where we have to believe something or do something or stand for something in order to feel good about ourselves, we get ourselves in all sorts of trouble. So I think that there, he's just saying, okay, if you can let go of these unhelpful attachments, then your TMS, then your underlying tension will decrease.
Is it like hubris? Is it like pride?
Yeah, it's totally pride and hubris.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Oh, I answered my own question, but yeah, you led the way. You led the way to that. Yeah, what stings your ego when you have to give up your attachments to things that puff up your pride, that you, different.
There you go. Like, that's part of why we always have to be perfect, is it protects our ego to be perfect. We feel better about ourselves when we're perfect. Why do we always have to be goodists? Well, we feel better about ourselves if we're goodists. If we can just let go about that a little bit and just feel okay of you know, being imperfect, even though it stings our ego, then we're okay.
Well, and we're creating these egotistical defenses because we have low self-esteem, because we've been criticized, because we really don't feel good about ourselves.
Right.
We need to appear. I noticed that in Gabor Mate's TED talk in Rio de Janeiro, he gave a list of all of these world conquerors, and he went through Hitler, Genghis Khan, Napoleon, I forget all, Alexander, and the one thing he said about them was that they were outsiders. Napoleon was a Corsican who was short. Hitler was of short stature. He was from Austria. Alexander was a Macedonian, not a Greek. He was an outsider. So they were always compensating in some way for their alienation. So that goes along with that, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah, they had an ego problem, we'd say.
Yeah. And maybe that's a more male approach to it, but yeah. That makes sense. And it kind of fits in with that whole turcordification idea that I think permeates the book, where he's saying it's all about connection to people. It's about attachment. We're all seeking that connection, maybe because for all the reasons that you described.
Yeah, if we're walking around with big egos and investing all this energy and projecting this, we're not really connecting to other people except through aggression, power.
Accomplishment, et cetera, yeah.
I need to conquer the world because I don't feel good about myself. And, so on and so forth. And on it goes, and on it goes.
Indeed. Let's see. So we're at 9:38 right now. Herbie, do you want to move on to chapter 39? Shall we jump to the next one?
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a good point for a transition.
Mr. Hope?
Yeah, if y'all think... Well, I do want to mention that, you know, these deadly emotions, this lady was holding in, you know, unforgiveness towards her husband. And because she would not, she said she would carry it to the grave. This is the second paragraph on chapter 38, letting go. Dr. Colbert told her that if she didn't let, you know, this anger that she had towards her husband, ex-husband, go, then, you know, it's going to be bad. You know, it'd be a bad turnout. And she said she'd carry it to the grave, and that's exactly what she did. And the thing is, that's how strong anger is. That's how strong these negative emotions in our bodies are. And I understand how you can focus on them. I understand that we're going to have them naturally. I understand they're going to be there. The things are, you know, it's when you hold them in there, you know, and then you add all that hate, add all that anger with it. You making something really dangerous in your body, you know, and just, you know, for whoever's listening, for future references, be careful of holding all that anger in, of holding hate towards people. I know people's done you wrong. I know people ain't. I mean, we've all been done wrong, and a lot of us have been done a lot worse than others. And the thing is, we can't keep letting them do us wrong. As long as we hold it in, we're going to keep going over that hurt, that pain, and we have to let it go. Okay, that's the only way we're going to heal, is let it go, and of course doing these things that Bob Hope did. So yeah, that'd be it, guys.
Yeah, in chapter 29, Steve outlines what it takes to live a happy, healthy life and thrive until you're 100, and he uses the example of Bob Hope, and he has 5 golden keys to health and happiness, beginning with Hope, Bob Hope. And yeah. I wonder how much Steve uses Bob Hope because of his association with golf.
And comedy.
Bob Hope has that golf book, Confessions of a Hooker, My Lifelong Affair with Golf, during which he admitted to only being in the hospital once in his life. Well, these 5 golden keys that Steve outlines are: do what you love. Oh, that's the biggest one. That's number one. Take a long walk every day. That's all right. Get a massage. And it says use power and fame to benefit other people. He uses the term benevolence. And I guess he's talking about Bob Hope's USO shows that traveled all around the world for the military, to bring him in touch with the folks back home. And he also said number 5 of these golden keys is nurture a loving, healthy relationship. And he uses the example of Bob Hope's marriage to his wife that lasted 70 years until death do us part. Now, I don't know how much he selected Hope because of his golf avocation, but I've certainly seen Bob Hope angry before on television. I don't know if he was completely perfect or whether he exemplified all of these things. I've seen him, but he seemed like your regular guy too, but he did a lot living with these 5 rules. And they aren't bad rules, even if hope didn't always live up to them. But how many of us can live up to these rules throughout a 70 years of marriage or
well, it's not like any of the rules were never, ever, ever get married. I mean, sorry, angry. Whoa!
Oh, there's one.
It's the Freudian slip.
Oh, there's
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Says a single guy. But no, he says, you know, like he might have gotten angry on the show occasionally, but, you know, maybe he did take a long walk and get a daily massage and uses his abilities for benevolent ends and... So I bet he did a pretty good job. It's a hard thing to maintain a relationship for a long time, like you mentioned. I tell you, yeah, I could go for a walk every day. I wish I did. Is those little things.
A lot of difference taking a long walk out on that nature preserve, especially this time of year when the wildflowers come out.
Yeah.
With those graded trails, it's really excellent out there. With the big view. You also get big views. I think getting a perspective on things involves being able to have line of sight going out a long way. If you can see 20 miles, it puts your own situation in perspective.
There you go.
The scenery counts, too, on your long walk.
I know the walks has really been helping me a lot. Every day when I walk, I can tell my vitality has like doubled, you know. So, Dennis, Tom, what about your exercises with the how you been doing, buddy?
Oh, just before here, I ran in the pool. I pool run, and usually a minimum a half hour. And I'm kind of adding 10 minutes here and getting up to an hour. So I listen to FM radio. So I followed Steve's advice about listening to music. And running in the pool, and I try to get at least 30 minutes a day of some kind of exercise. And I know the worst I've ever felt in my life was when I said, okay, I'm going to completely quit moving, see if that will get my hip better. I will not play any more tennis. I will not do anything physical, and I wound up getting into a clinical depression because of that. And so the worst thing you could do is don't have any kind of physical activity. That is, I've always advocated, people have read my post, minimally get 30 minutes a day of a walk, and that'll keep you sane so that you can deal with the TMS gremlin.
I wonder how much this has to do with some of those basic facts in EMDR, you know, like about your brainstem scanning all the time for trouble ahead. But if you take a long walk, your eyes move around and break those obsessive eye movement patterns. The same thing when you're bicycling or when you're doing any kind of exercise, it breaks up that obsessive pattern of that activates the flight, fight, freeze response, the mammalian survival.
I think that's exactly. I think you hit that right on the head. Yeah, I think that's exactly mm-hmm. it. Get that exercise. Get out of that nasty obsessive ruminative cycle. That's a brilliant idea.
And that's also what your therapist is telling you not to do when they're saying, "Cut out all physical activity. You can't run anymore. You can't do this anymore. You can't do that." You're only reinforcing the TMS process that way, making it worse. It's like turning up the amplifier.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. North Star, you got anything you wanna say about the exercise? A lot of people, you know, has to understand gardening, you know, is an exercise.
Now you're talking.
A lot of hobbies. I mean, there's thousands of hobbies that are exercise. You know, things we love to do. You know, I like playing guitar is one of my hobbies. Exercise my hands, man. But I'll tell you what, when I'm done with it, because I'm working both hands differently, you know, when I'm done with it, I feel a lot more clear in my mind. But you know, there's a lot of different ways to exercise. What do you do, North Star?
Well, I've been kind of in a funk the last month or so for a couple different. My typical thing is about an hour a day I exercise, either walking, swimming. I was up to about a mile in the pool, or I've got a recumbent bike, but this last, I've just been in a funk. The weather's been awful. And then my pool time, the club is just kind of a depressing area, and mentally I've had a hard time. It's mostly older folks that are there, and the conversation always revolves around the pain du jour and who's in the hospital. And so I really have been going, and I need to shake out of that. The weather's finally breaking up. I went for my first walk around the nature trail. I was walking 3 miles a day over there, but it's just been too cold and snowy, and now it's just mud. So mud and still ice. So I'm going to be getting back into the groove, but yeah, my exercise is my sanity. If I don't exercise, I just start getting more depressed, and I think the aches are worse. Yeah, so it's really important to, but like I said, now I'm trying to feel my way around. Okay, when can I go down to the club when the complainers aren't there as much? So when you I get a lap lane to myself, you know, I don't care to sit and hear about so-and-so's arthritic, you know.
Yeah, so you know the power, you know, of exercise, getting oxygen in your blood.
Oh, I think absolutely.
Bruce, you bike and mountain climb, right?
Yeah, I was down there bouldering. I've noticed every week since I have been taking 3,000 mics of vitamin C with each meal, I've been doing a boulder problem almost every day. There's nothing like that to get you out of your frame of reference. Improvement is its own, is the best solution. It is the best. When you see improvement in what you're doing, that makes you more optimistic, and TMS fades just through the optimism, the power of achievement. You Bruce? Do more, you get,
Hello, Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, good, finish. I just want to ask you a question.
Oh, I'll go ahead and ask.
It's GR here. I'm interested. So, hi.
Oh,
you're
GR.
Hey,
GR. Hey, hey, Eric.
I'm so glad to hear your voice.
I know. It's the family plan here. It's so nice. Well, I wanted to ask you, because I remember reading somewhere, I was very intrigued. This was very early on when I joined the Wiki, that I remember because I have all these like different symptoms going on in my body. I think it's because I'm really addressing a lot of the psychological issues that they've been I'm getting all these like a symptom here, a symptom there. But I remember reading that you would go to the gym, right? And I think that you would have trouble, but you would stay there. And then you would hobble back to your car. Do you remember writing a post like that?
Yeah, well, see, now
but,
when
but
I...
But you got better from all that, right?
Over time. You see, like... last summer, when I go to the gym, I would hobble there, and I couldn't bring my foot over the curb when I'd walk there. And now that I can walk back and forth, all I notice is the little infirmities, the little ache. Or
well,
the
that's
little
so
pain.
Encouraging to me.
Yeah, but it's like you're always, your perspective is always limited by the symptoms as that are occurring right now. If I could see the difference, you know, all the time, it would uplift me so much, but still you're so preoccupied with those little hurts that they still hold you back. Even if you've improved, you still are you're looking for 100%. So
it's a disease. That's the problem.
It is. That's the problem. That's the definition of it. And there your mind is still obsessing on the little hurts, instead of on the big picture of improvement. That's why I notice with improvements, though, it cancels out that. You have milestones.
Think one thing that discourages me, and I don't know, maybe some of you have had this happen and can explain it to me, is that I was doing really well this summer and September, and then I had like a major setback. I guess it was in October. And I'm still trying to, you know... come back. But I found like yesterday, oh my gosh, I had like an amazing day. I was walking a lot. I mean, I still have to walk and I have to sit. Like I made this little routine that I bring a chair outside because we still have snow here. And so I would walk and then I sit and then I walk and I sit. And And then today, I found that when I was trying to do that, and I did like so many laps doing that, just in my backyard, I had all these like little, like different, like pains in my legs. I mean, all these weird little things. And it immediately discouraged me. I had to fight through it. So has any of you ever had like one good day and then one day not good? And
yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know it's variation.
How about one good hour and one bad hour?
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah, one day's a little bit worse and you start to think, oh, I'm going back. And then you notice you took a rest. Something changed psychologically, and then you notice that you're better. And you forget about what happened the day before. But it's over the long haul. You can't really, you know, just let yourself get, you can't let yourself bounce up and down according to momentary symptoms. You have to look
at
that.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to really get, a handle on that. Like, because they're all so different, it makes it really hard, you know. But I think that's the purpose of it.
Exactly. That's the pain strategy. It is cagey. It is smart. It is tricky. And it's there to mess you up. It's there to distract you. Steve called this particular phenomena the, I think he called it non-linearity. That's what it does. It goes up and it goes down. And it goes in and it goes out. And it's there to mess you up. It's there to distract you.
Yeah, and you just have to keep going. I know people have different versions of,
exactly.
What I try to do is I try to, and I know this is not for everybody, but I know when I read books like this, like Steve's book or Fred Amir, like they all pressed, like they pushed against the symptoms.
Uh-huh.
For me, that works. Like for me, that seems. I mean, I'm kind to myself, but I feel that if I don't do, I mean, I'll sit when I have to, but I try to, to walk. Like this winter I didn't go outside because of all the snow, and because I'm not walking as I would like, I basically walked around my dining room table. But I would, like, even if I had pain, I would, say, okay, I'm going to walk around this table, like, three times, and then I could sit. And then I would sit a few minutes, and I'd walk around again three times. But that seems to really, like what Bruce is saying, it, like, motivates me. It, like, it's very helpful.
Absolutely. That sounds great. That's what, yeah. Sounds like
and,
a pattern.
And do you, and I don't know the voice who just spoke. Can I ask who you are?
Oh, this is Forrest.
Oh, Forrest, yeah. I didn't recognize your voice.
That's okay, yeah.
But I know, like, people have different theories of that, like, don't do that, or, but for me that works, like, just, and I think
oh,
I read
yeah.
one, Forrest, with you that I think you were walking or something, and you said, I'm just going to do this, like, it hurt or something. I don't remember what it was, but I remember mm-hmm. that, I remember reading that.
Absolutely. That's what I've done with knee issues. I was having knee issues. I had knee issues for a couple of years. And I think the best thing I ever did for my knee issues was join a broomball team. It was just a silly thing.
That
was, yeah. That's exactly it. We were playing broomball on an ice rink and having a great time. Oh, but I am old and out of shape. And it was a bunch of young kids. Oh, they killed me. I couldn't keep up. But I had a great time anyway.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you're talking about, where you send a very, very powerful signal to your TMS saying, I'm not afraid of you. And I think that's great. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, I'm trying to do that now, really trying on different, like, you have different triggers that would set off the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to do that with my triggers.
Yeah, I think that's terrific. Now, it's not the only strategy. I used to occasionally get a tingling in my left pinky, and it got worse whenever I typed. And so, I could type more, and sometimes I did type more, but I wasn't going to make myself type more. What worked for that was just completely forgetting about it. Rather than pushing through the pain, it was forgetting about it. So, you know, different things will work at different times. And if one thing doesn't work, then try another. But it sounds like, you know, you've got something which is working for you.
Yeah, I'm listening every day. Like, I listen to my body, listen to my mind, see, like, what strategy today.
There you go.
Yeah, regarding pushing through, I noticed that I was, sometimes when I'd walk downhill, it wouldn't hurt that much, and sometimes it would, but always consistently it was downhill. So what I've been doing lately is to go as steep uphill as I can, and then turn around and go as steep downhill as I can. And at first it really hurt the first couple of times. And then I noticed last week there were a new group of muscles that were taking over on the downhill that weren't hurting. And when I get to the bottom and back to the car, it didn't hurt like it did before. It was like confronting it directly, just saying, I'm going to walk downhill, so I have to really backpedal all the way. And instead of it building, I found new nerve pathways activating other muscle groups. I turned a little bit sideways. And with that strategy, I noticed at the end, hey, I'm walking along okay when I get back to the car.
What wow.
You know? But, you know, what strategy works for you is the one that you need to do.
Right.
That won't work for everybody. I was just interested in what it did. I realized what new nerve pathways were when I did this. Because if I turned slightly sideways and backpedaled on my left leg, the one that hurt, instead of it going through the knee, it was the muscle group was on the outside and it wasn't hurting anymore. I had slightly changed my routine. I'd snuck up on it or something, you know.
You know, one of the new triggers for me, and I mean, this is since, I guess, since maybe December. I haven't had this, that when I'm a passenger in a car or even driving, that I start to get, like, nerve pain in my buttocks. And then also, recently, like, my neck tightens up. And I'm in such excruciating pain, and I, you know, it may be like 40-minute ride. I still do it, but I'm in agony. I talk to myself. I bring magazines to look at, but I haven't been able to get a handle on this. Does anybody have any suggestions?
You've been practicing the clean thinking, right?
The what?
You have been practicing clean thinking, right?
Oh, yes. Eric, I've been doing that. Yeah, absolutely.
And you understand what that means?
Yes.
Okay. You just need to keep doing that because it's only been, what, 2 weeks? Has it been 2 weeks?
Yes, since you've been, yes.
I mean, since you started practicing clean thinking?
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
It's hard. It's hard, ain't it?
Oh, my gosh. This morning I woke up and I was, like, my thoughts kept going, like, oh, what if you can't go to the wedding? And what if you can't do this? And what if you, each one I had to say, nope. I did the floating. I let it float, like Claire Weeks said.
Uh-huh.
I did not entertain those thoughts.
Okay.
But it's a lot of work.
Yeah, you have to keep doing that work right there. And you'll see, you should get results. I mean, good, you not should, you will get results.
You mean just from the clean thinking in the driving of the car?
Well, see, with the clean thinking, you also added in Claire Weeks. So you're adding in different things that you've learned over the last year already, right?
To the
clean thinking. See, that's what you've done. You're taking all these pieces of the puzzle, and now you're putting it all together now, GR.
I'm trusting. I'm really believing it's all going to work together.
It is.
What I've been telling myself lately, too, I don't know if this will encourage you. You know, we've got years of training with these thinking patterns, and it's not going to go away overnight, especially if you've got the long history, you know, like those of us who've had a fibromyalgia diagnosis or something. And it's just like losing weight. You don't put the weight on, you know, 20 pounds at a time. It's one at a time, and they come off 1 pound at a time. And so that's what I myself, just with this thinking, to be kind to myself first and foremost, and then to just realize it's going to take time to get new neural pathways established, to break all those harmful thought patterns that have contributed to my TMS. So anyway, patience.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. That's very helpful. I mean, I love the idea of creating new neural pathways and kind of, I don't know if you shut the other ones down, but I know they're there, but they're not active. That's exciting to me.
Yeah, the more you do the clean thinking, the more you use, your Clairweight style, the more you use the TMS knowledge therapy, the more you add all that together and just keep going through it, keep toughing it through the day. Don't even look at it like you're toughing it, because then that makes it hard. If you look at everything like it's a job, then that can even make it strenuous. So
right.
Learn to take it easy while you're even in the midst of, changing a negative to a positive,
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah.
Because you know as much as I do, GR, as much as everybody on here, it's not just positive thinking. There's a lot more to it than just positive thinking, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's the thing that makes your thinking.
Yeah, the thing that makes me feel good about GR is she had such good results back a few months ago, and that just goes to show it's TMS. You bit the bullet with it. I mean, you bit into it, and now it's fighting you with everything it's got, and it's trying to throw the kitchen sink at you and everything. And you just stay in there, and you keep doing it, and you will have that big result. You will have your success story, and you'll be on here telling everybody else,
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I know. I think that's true. I feel like that. I just set, like, it's like throwing everything. Like, I can't lift right now my right arm at all. Like, I can't lift it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to the TMS doctor, and he was kind of, like, almost laughing. He just said, I thought he was going to send me for an MRI. But he did, he just said, oh, it's part of the TMS.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Who are you seeing, by the way?
Guatz in New
Guatz,
Jersey.
Excellent. Good to hear.
Excuse me?
Good to hear. I've heard great things about him.
He's wonderful. He is, first of all, he spends so much time with you. Like every time, like the first time I went, he spent 2 hours, then he spends an hour and an hour. So he's very good.
You are in great hands.
Dennis, Tom, you got any advice for GR?
Excuse me?
Sure. Dennis, yeah. I'd like to comment on how long it takes. I heard the discussion on neural pathways, and that's kind of structural, I think. Recently I posted about Candace Pert, and from my knowledge of our nervous system, it's pretty much like an electrical system. When you get a pain, when a bee stings you, you don't have to form a new neural pathway for months and months for your brain to discover, I got stung by a bee and it hurts. That's immediate. I used to have a tennis coach, and he was a great coach because there was no BSing around, and he would say, Tom, change it now. Change it now. And I realized, you could change it right now. It's hard, but someone has to tell you to do it. Candace Pert discovered, I think, the opiate receptors, and that's got to do with all this other stuff. But my understanding of the nervous system is that it's electrochemical, and you can change it immediately. You don't have to wait months and months for reconditioning, but your mind, the knowledge, you just have to tell yourself, do it now. What takes longer is maybe to change your living condition or your life condition, the emotional stressors that are, if you can change those, then you'll probably change your arm and all those other things that are bothering you right afterwards. So I noticed one thing, you weren't talking anything about emotional things, GR. You're only discussing your aches and pains, and, I don't expect you to pour your soul out on, in a conference call like this, but do you understand that the emotional things have to be taken care of?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, all right, well.
Yeah, I just started, you know, I really procrastinate journaling, but I've been, you know, Eric really suggests journaling. So I've been really journaling a little bit at a time, you know, and Dr. Guatz recommended a therapist. So I've been seeing her. So that's, you know, I'm really working on all that, too. I mean, I definitely know, you know, it's psychological.
That's great.
Good. All right, yeah. All right. Good. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I definitely, you know, I've had a lot of changes in my life, you know, so I know that is, but I appreciate you saying that because it reinforces that.
Yeah, I think if you can change the, you know, the stressors, the things on the Rahe Holmes list, those situations, life situations, they're the things that cause the TMS. But if you can change the situation or understand that the situation is what's causing the TMS, you can accept it or change it, but you say, okay, the pain is caused, the physical pain is a cover for the emotional issues that are happening, you know, in the background. They're the cause.
See, I think I do that, but I think, like, there's still a like obsession about the symptoms. I do think that. I'm trying not to do that. But it's hard when you're limited, you know, because I can't lift my arm up, so I need somebody to help me get dressed. It's like such a, ugh. So I'm trying not to, you know, concentrate on the symptoms. But it is like, for me, a catch-22.
Okay. Your therapist, was she recommended, he recommended by Dr. Guatz?
Yes.
Okay, so she is on board with TMS and understands it, and you're on the same page as far as TMS knowledge?
She's definitely TMS. She's had TMS herself. She deals mostly with TMS clients.
Okay, well then she understands what you're going through, and eventually between the two of you, you'll hopefully take care of the emotional issues and understand that that's what's causing the physical symptom. All right, good.
Yeah, you're repressing your emotions because of underlying stresses in your environment, changing the biochemistry of your brain, and so all of these other things are happening. All of these obsessive compulsive patterns are developing. It's like if you get rid of the stress, then the underlying biochemistry of your brain will change, and then you won't have TMS. You have no need for TMS, in other words.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty good, Bruce.
But the devil is in the details. It's how you apply it. That's the hard thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I like these programmed dreams. That loosens me up. I notice I've been working at the individual symptoms and at all of the stuff in the external world. But once you start letting that stuff bubble up, then the other stuff falls into place. It's really true. whether going to a psychotherapist and going through chimney sweeping, you know, will do that for you, or whether EMDR will do that for you, or EFT with tapping will do that for you, or whether just knowledge therapy will do that for you. You have to get that stuff loosened up. Something to loosen it up. Maybe, you know, just like going on a sea cruise. You know, you could see how somebody falling in love would immediately lose their back pain. Because it would
right.
change the biochemistry
change the
of their brain.
So
right.
Yeah.
It would loosen them up.
Yeah, that is so, that's
stop
so good.
In the here and now.
That's what we need to be able to prescribe. We need to be able to prescribe falling in love. You go to the doctor and they're like, okay, here's your prescription.
that's good.
People were put in a booth.
Oh, I can't hear North Star. I think North Star is talking. Say it again.
I was just saying, what's that Shakespeare quote about a man with a toothache cannot be in love? Or it's something like that. Does that ring a bell with somebody?
Cute.
I'm not mangling the quote.
Not at the same time, he has a toothache.
No, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah,
well,
it's a good one. Yeah, I'll have to find that and post it on the wiki.
I believe it. I've never had a toothache, and I've been in love for a long time. So, Doing pretty good, I guess.
Hey, that's good.
I like
that's
that.
Good.
I'll take that.
Shakespeare knew about human behavior and repressed emotions and pain.
It's good.
Yeah, another good reason to floss regularly.
Okay, GR. Now, okay, Bruce, you was saying something. You want to finish what you were saying, Bruce?
Well, I think I finished it. It's just like when you loosen up, it is sort of like Monty says. You have to stop repressing in the here and now, and that not going back to first sources. You don't need to find this event that made you this way. You just have to loosen up right now. Stop.
When you
repressing.
Say loosen up right now, do you mean like what you're feeling, like loosen, like the energy, like maybe negative energy that's in you?
Instead of adopting the strategies, emotional and psychological strategies on a day-to-day basis that keep you repressing, you have to give that up and let your natural, your brain return to a normal state through, what do they call that, homeostasis, where it tries, where it heals itself.
Well, how do you do that?
Stop stressing.
Well, I think I stress
more. It's like
more
circular logic, isn't it? It's like a tautology. It goes around in a circle.
Keep going, GR. You stress more.
You know, I think I stress more about the TMS than anything else. Like, my life is pretty, it's pretty easy right now with except, like, it seems like the easiest it's been, but, you know, my children have just left, you know, the home, which I really miss, and then I just recently got married. So there's a lot of new stresses,
okay.
But I don't have any, like...
That is the mechanism of repression right there, GR.
What is the mechanism?
The TMS instead of about the emotions. That is it, exactly. It's easier to stress about the TMS than about the emotions that you're going through right now.
Well, okay, there's a maxim in AA, which could be applicable here, is we don't want to work someone else's program. So that's a decision for her to make. But certainly, Dr. Sarno has written a wonderful, wonderful passage where he talks about it's the obsession about the symptoms that really get you. And I think is that part of what you're getting at?
Yeah,
tying into the Holmes array, you've got a lot of change going on. With the kids leaving, that's tough.
Marriage.
Yeah.
Jeez.
A new marriage. Yeah.
I mean, if you listen to me, never get married. So yeah, I'm safe on that.
And I was a widow. I was a widow for like 10 years, a young widow, like for 10 years,
and
then I, you know, recently, you know, got married in May. So that's all a change, I'm sure. And then my husband. What?
GR, excuse me for interrupting, but have you ever looked at the whole Rahe Holmes list?
Yes, the stressor list, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I don't remember what is what.
Well, what Bruce said about homeostasis, see, anything that we crave homeostasis, everything does that's living wants to be in its comfort zone that it's used to. Now, events that take you out of your homeostasis, they create tension, stress, TMS. So life events like getting married, your kids leaving home, empty nest, all those things take you out of your homeostasis that you had become accustomed to. So look at that list again, and you've named two of them already that are creating your symptoms, two stressors.
And another one is that, now, my new husband, he travels, and I don't, I mean, that's really hard for me. So I'm really alone, you know, so it's hard. And I think that you're right, I'm out of my comfort zone.
Things have changed recently. Yeah. So, but that scientifically, there's the explanation of why you have symptoms, you know. So that's the TMS knowledge penicillin. Okay. So, look at that list again and see what else is going on.
AGR, are you doing just something fun every day?
North Star, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, are you having fun with something? I've been trying to tell myself instead of, you know, I'm in a defensive posture so often, you know, battling TMS, that I decided, I don't know if you ever saw the movie What About Bob? I love that movie. It just cracks me up. But where Bob decides to take a vacation from his worries. So anyway, I've kind of adopted that with every day, where I tell my husband, you know what, every day we need to do something fun. I don't care what it is. We go to the ice cream store and we get a scoop of ice cream, or I watch something funny on YouTube, or any, that's been really helping me, because I realize part of my issue, I haven't been having fun. I haven't been enjoying life.
Yeah, I agree. I also, I mean, today I had a girlfriend come over. It was fun. And tomorrow I have another girlfriend coming over, because I'm not working right now. I took some time off of work. But you're right. I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to have fun, since I'm, you know, somewhat limited. I mean, I love to watch movies. And I mean, I love to exercise, but I mean, I like go to the gym, but I'm not able to do that right now.
Spring is coming. We'll be able to get out. The sun's going to return and the flowers will bloom. And I'm telling myself that too, because the weather's still cold and icky over here in Montana. I was really, every day I was out in the summer when the weather was warm. So, and I know you will too. So, hang in there.
How about there's a lot of home equipment you can buy at nominal cost, like exercise bikes, treadmills, cross-country ski machines. Isn't there, when you said you walk around the kitchen table three times, I mean, honestly, I got to tell you, there's got to be more things you can do even at home watching TV than walking around the kitchen table. I mean, can you get an exercise? My mother, let me tell you a little bit. My mother had lifelong, as long as I knew her, arthritis in her hand, okay? So we got her a Schwinn exercise bike, that gold one. She would not touch it for a year. She said, I'm not getting on it, no way. And suddenly, I don't know, one day she got on it, and then after that, religiously, she rode that Schwinn exercise bike for 30 minutes a day, and her lifelong arthritis in her hand went away.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Just riding an exercise bike.
I do have a machine that I would love. I wouldn't know where to put it. Like, I like the elliptical, but there's one that you can sit down on. So you're still moving your arms and your legs, but I think that would make me feel, like, comfortable because of what's going on in my body. I just have to figure out where I would put it.
Where to put it? I'm not buying that one. I'm sorry, GR. I'm not buying this. You don't have a space in your house to put, it can't take up more than an elliptical machine like 48 inches, then there's no room for, get rid of your dining room table and put that machine there and get on it and start doing it a half hour a day.
Hey, that's a great idea. I can move the table over.
There you go.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
Okay, next week we want to hear that you got that machine there and you're starting to use it, because you can just do it right in the comfort of your home. You don't have to wait for the winter to thaw out, and there's a lot of machines you can buy for $99 to $300 that'll do the trick for you.
Yeah, I'm going to actually go online and look.
All right, good.
Good deal. What was you going to say, Bruce?
If you get yourself a travel track and a bicycle, you can put the bicycle on the travel track trainer, and then when it comes time to ride, you can take the real bicycle out after you've been practicing.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Roll out of it that way, and then the world
I'm getting right off. Well, all these good ideas, I appreciate it. I'll let you know how I do, because I have to get off now, but thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah, don't forget the laughter. Don't forget the
laugh.
No,
I will laugh. I will laugh. And I love you guys so much.
We love you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We love you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. Bye.
And with that, guys, I guess we'll call it a show. Is that cool with everybody?
Sounds great to me.
All right.
You guys. You all are the best.
Thank you, North Star. You are too. And Tennis Tom, Bruce, Forrest, and everybody showed up. Same as usual. Great show. And next week will be the last week in Steve's book here. So,
after that, we're going to have a two-hour show with Steve, starting an hour early, 8 to 10.
Wow.
All right. So, we're going to, so 2 weeks from now, it'll be Steve Oz and it should be live here on the show. So, that's great.